Support for this broadcast of Two Rivers 30 Minutes comes in part from a grant from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes.
From TubeCityOnline.com, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes, a weekly series of interviews with people making news around the McKeesport area. Produced by Tube City Community Media Incorporated, a nonprofit corporation. I'm Jason Toger, the executive director. On this show, we talk one-on-one with elected officials, community leaders, and others who are trying to make a difference in the Monongahela area. And we also take your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.
It tells a story that began almost 300 years ago, and that is the Braddock's Battlefield History Museum, which is in North Braddock, as the name implies. It is at the location of the famous battle during the French and Indian War, one that some historians believe was crucial to the English taking control of the North American continent back in the 18th century. On the line with us is Sean McIntyre. He's with the Braddock's Battlefield Historical Museum. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Jay. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right.
You already had some visitors as we are recording this. You've got some visitors at the museum. I'm taking you away from them. What are they interested in seeing today?
Today we've actually had people from California and from Florida and some Oregon. So we have people that are traveling from across country. Some of them were born here and just coming back to visit the old stomping grounds, but found our museum and was something to go and look at today. So they're coming to learn about the French Indian War and how the first real world war started here.
There are Heinz History Museum in downtown Pittsburgh is considered one of the best history museums apparently in the country now. There's a historical museum in McKeesport. There's historical museums in Washington, PA, and in Greensburg. There are art museums. What makes the Braddock's Battlefield Museum History Center, I guess, is the actual name, so unique?
Yeah, we are focused on the Battle of the Monongahela, this battle that took place that started a worldwide war. This battle
the first,
actually
arguably
place,
the first world war, right? Before...
Yes.
1918.
Very
right?
much so.
Yeah.
And it actually takes place on the lands that we're sitting. So right here in Western Pennsylvania, this all began. And this battle takes place before the war is actually declared, about a year before the war is actually declared.
Yeah, give us your telephone number and your website for people to get more information.
Our phone number is 412-271-0800. And our website is www.braddocksbattlefield.org.
And Sean, tell folks what your title is with the Braddock's Battlefield History Center.
I am the Public Engagement and Operations Manager, so I do outreach and I run the museum itself.
Physically located, you mentioned it's on the site where the Battle of the Monongahela happened, but tell us a little bit about the building that you are in. I know we had years ago the late Robert Messner on this program to talk about the founding of the Braddock's Battlefield Museum. It's come a long way since then, I think.
Yes. Very much so. So we started out, Mr. Messner started this museum in the Braddock Carnegie Library, which is under renovation right now. And then he got this building, I believe in 2005, renovated it, created the museum in what was the old number one Cochran Pontiac. So this is the original Cochran Pontiac here in Braddock. So he actually redid the building. So our museum right now is in the showroom, but we just finished our interpretive plan to expand into the rest of this building and into the 3.5 acres we own behind our building now.
How many square feet about do you have?
Right now, we're at 1,100 in the museum. We have another 5,500 square feet to move into. And then we have 3.5 acres and maybe looking at some more soon on this block. So
that's an exciting time for the museum, and to think that it came from, I remember seeing it in the late 1990s, and it was one room at the Carnegie Library, and you are now expanding to encompass 3 acres in the very near future.
Yeah, we want to be, we like to be part of this community, and we want to kind of develop into a much bigger space and make North Braddock and Braddock more of a destination here in Western Pennsylvania.
We're talking with Sean McIntyre from the Braddock's Battlefield History Center about the museum and its future plans. When is a good time to see it? Because the holidays are coming up, Passover and Easter. Summer is coming up. Kids are going to be on spring break first and then summer break. there's always this, what do we go do today? How do we entertain the visitors from out of town, et cetera? What is a good day? What are the days that you're open, I guess, is first of all?
Right now, up until April 1st, we're Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then beginning in April, we're actually expanding our hours greatly. We're actually moving Wednesday through Sunday, and it'll be 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
How much does it cost?
For adults, it's $5. For children, it's $3. We offer discounts for members. And if you live in the 15104 zip code, you actually get in for free.
There we go. On display at the museum, you have a variety of both original artifacts, some recreations, and you also have some paintings on display. Talk about the paintings of the battles that you have on display.
Oh, we have several paintings, many of whom are actually from a Pittsburgher named Robert Griffin. He lives up in the North Hills, Richland Township, Pennsylvania. So a lot of the depictions are by him, and it kind of, the paintings tell as much of the story as any artifact that's here. From the literal painting of the British soldiers crossing the Monongahela River to what a trading post would look like in the time period, and talk about Washington visiting Fort LaBeouf. And it's a very great painting of him. And I believe that one's actually a John Buxton painting of Washington standing and talking to the French officers. And you see the shadows of the natives that are also involved in this in the doorway, and like people that were supposed to be in the room where it happened, and they weren't. So I think it's a very interesting painting to kind of bring up for discussion how, you know, these people were part of this, yet, you know, they didn't get to take part in that discussion of the division of their land.
And the Griffin paintings are very vivid, and as far as we know, they are as historically accurate as it is possible to make them without having had photography in the 1750s, right?
Right. I mean, he is a person that does a great amount of research. Most of the people actually in his paintings themselves are people that are currently reenactors. So I know several reenactors that are depicted in his paintings, and have been used for the purpose of to look like other officers and other soldiers. And I've even seen paintings where Robert Griffin has actually put himself in the painting, which is the Battle of Bushy Run. He has himself in the painting. So
you're seeing not just a work of art, but a work of historical documentation as well. It's a very unique situation that you are looking at art, but you can admire it, the art for its art's sake, but you can also admire it for capturing this moment in history that, again, photography didn't exist. There was no video camera there. There was no Zoom. There were no Teams meetings to show us what this was actually looking like. It wasn't like the State of the Union the other night where, you know, you could watch it, what's happening there. You know, he's going back on the written word and I suppose maybe a few sketches that were left behind by certain people.
We have a decent supply of different artifacts. One of the ones I find most interesting is there's actually a medallion of the Russian Tsarina, Anna, and that was actually found here at Braddock's Field. So basically in this area, and it is a silver thing from the coronation or her coronation. So here's something that doesn't really make sense here, but it is here, and it is dated to the time of the battle.
Our guest this morning is Sean McIntyre. He's with the Braddock's Battlefield History Center. When we come back, I want to ask you to go a little bit more into the background of the, not just the Battle of the Monongahela, but also the French and Indian War, which, as Dave Barry often pointed out, was not between the French and the Indians, which is very misleading. He thinks it's false advertising. Broadcasting from the Tube City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport, this is Two Rivers 30 Minutes on Radio 81 WEDO, 1550 and 101.1 WZUM, the Pittsburgh Jazz Channel, and Tube City Online Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Support for this broadcast comes from Striffler's Family Funeral Homes. Since 1866, Striffler's has provided competitive compassionate professional memorial services for families in White Oak, McKeesport, Dravosburg, Portview, and the surrounding areas. Striflers offers comprehensive pre-planning services and aftercare. And through its affiliated company Design Monuments, Striflers also provides permanent markers and memorials crafted in stone, bronze, and other high-quality materials. Learn more at Striflers.com or call 412-678-6191.
I made the joke before the break that the French and Indian War was not between the French and Indian and the Indians, and Dave Barry said that always. It was very misleading to him. Talk about the French and Indian War. What were the origins of this battle that brought in the two great superpowers of their day, the United Kingdom and France?
So, and you talk about the French and Indian War, and it's very interesting because we only call it that in the United States.
What do they call it elsewhere?
In Europe, it's called the Seven Years' War.
Okay.
Because it lasts 7 years. And in Canada, they actually call it the War of Conquest.
Okay.
And the war itself is basically, I like to tell the students when they're here that it has a lot to do with fashion and the control of land. Okay. And people laugh when I say fashion, but it has a lot to do with the fur trade in the time period. So buckskin pants and beaver skin hats were very popular in Europe at the time. So people like to get those, and we had an abundance of them. So the trade with the Native Americans here was able to make that possible. So we were trying, both the British side and the French side were trying to control that trade.
What was this area even called? Because it was not Pennsylvania, and you know, when William Penn was not the governor of anything, what was this entire area considered?
So prior to European involvement, this was divided up into quite a number of different native groups. You had the Shawnee, who were largely in this area, the Seneca, which is part of the Iroquois Confederacy, who were into this area, and you had the Lenni Lenape, or the Delaware, who were also in this area. So there was Queen Aliquippa was a Seneca leader, but she was right there in McKeesport. Mm-hmm. Her village was at where the point is in McKeesport, where the Yaqaghani and the Mon come together. The Shawnee had villages all through this area. There was another Seneca village on the Allegheny River. There was a Lenni Lenape village where Lawrenceville is today. So you have a great many of Native nations living in, working in this area prior to European settlement. And at the time of this battle, this is actually part of Virginia.
Okay.
Virginia lays claim to this territory. So the troops from Captain William Trent's company, who were building that first fort at the what we now call Point State Park downtown, was actually a Virginia militia unit that was a construction crew. They were there to build that first fort before the French came and took the first building from them and made it Fort Duquesne.
We're talking with Sean McIntyre from the Braddock's Battlefield History Center. So how dense was the population? I mean, you did not have dense cities, but it sounds like you had a lot of settlements and indigenous tribes, villages around the area. We're talking thousands of people, hundreds of people. We don't know.
It's hard to know the density at that time. Okay. The Shinnepinstown, which is what Lawrenceville is today, was a well-populated village. So there was a decent amount of people there up until the 1750s. So just before this war takes place, Shinnepinstown is still operative. Logstown up in what is now Ambridge, PA, was still a very populated village. So there was definitely still a decent amount, probably in the thousands, of Native people living in this area. And this was still all dense forest. So it wasn't easy to just build somewhere.
When did the French arrive?
The French arrive in the late 1600s.
Okay.
Into Canada with Champlain's mm-hmm. visits to that area. So they're here relatively early, basically or roughly around the same time the British start doing some settlements here.
And how do they arrive here? They come, I'm presuming, up the St. Lawrence River and through the Great Lakes, and they come down from Lake Erie into the Pittsburgh area? Or what is now the Pittsburgh area?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So basically, the French were trying to control that entire area. So they actually do come in through the Great Lakes. And the waterways are your highways in the time period. Mm-hmm. So they're using Lake Erie, Lake Ontario, Lake Champlain as their main routes. And then they would do a small portage and use French Creek to the Allegheny River and the Allegheny River all the way to here and all the way to Louisiana, which is part of the reason they were trying to control that territory.
That seems like a very circuitous route to us today, but it was much easier than trying to cross over the Allegheny Mountains, is what I'm guessing. There were no roads. There were no railroads connecting these villages. You settled along the river, which coincidentally, Braddock not only has the Monongahela River there, but it also has the mouth of Turtle Creek there. So very strategically located. And I understand there were some fur trading settlements around what is now the town of Turtle Creek as well, correct?
John Fraser had his cabin there, and that's where the original European building here in Braddock was, and it's now on what is the grounds of the Edgar Thomson Works. He had a trading cabin there for some time, and he was actually the second in command of Trent's company, who was building the fort at what is now Point State Park.
So the indigenous people are living on this land. It's their birthright. They were born there. They have settled. They have raised families, and the French begin coming in. As you mentioned earlier, they are trying to get buckskin, deer's pelts, and beaver pelts to use to make hats and coats and whatever else and send them back to Europe. That fashion is driving this. And was this a congenial trade for a while between the indigenous, the Lenape and other tribes, and the French traders? Did they get along?
Yes, they actually got along pretty well with the French. The French actually had great trading terms with them, so that trade was very welcome with the French and with the native population. The British were also trading with them. British goods tended to be not as good as the French ones. So basically they liked working with the French a little more, and the French gave a better price.
And the British had kind of settled in the Atlantic Ocean, Atlantic Coast, Jamestown, and up around Philadelphia, and I guess they had probably were up in present-day New York City by that
point. Yeah, all the way up through Boston.
So we have the two great world powers that would be like the U.S. and China, or the U.S. and Russia, you know, or India and Pakistan, and they have gradually moved into this whole new area, and they are slowly creeping towards one another, aren't they? When do the British start to come into what is now Western Pennsylvania? When do they start to?
They truly start to push into this area in 1753. Governor Dinwiddie of Virginia really wants to mark this area, and negotiations with Tanaka Reason, or the Half King, were being done to build that first fort at the forks of the Ohio. So they basically send a young Major Washington all the way up to Fort LaBeouf, which is up in Erie, Pennsylvania, just south of Erie, Pennsylvania, to basically say, the French, you're on our land and you should leave. And the French don't take that so well.
Well, it's very interesting to me, and we have to take another pause. The time goes quickly, but it's very interesting to me that the British could come in and say to the French, you're on our land. And the French say, well, this is our land. And the indigenous people really don't get much of a say in the whole thing, do they?
Like
you mentioned in the Robert Griffin paintings, they're the shadows that are watching from the door as these people from 5,000 miles away are deciding whether or not they're going to have a world war on their property.
Yeah, very much so.
It's quite a thing to think about it. The implications of that, it reverberates down through history as we look at some of the conflicts going on around the world right now. It seems as if 300 years later, not much has changed, has it? We're talking with Sean McIntyre from the Braddock's Battlefield History Center, 412-271-0800, or braddocksbattlefield.org. is the number. They are expanding their hours this summer, so check out the website or give them a call. They are located just up the hill from the Carnegie Library of Braddock, near Braddock Avenue, Ardmore Boulevard, and the Parkway East. When we come back, I want to ask you about this Battle of the Monongahela and walk us through just how terrifying this must have been to have been either French, British, or one of the indigenous soldiers fighting in this, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're tuned to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, and we'll be back in 30 seconds to wrap things up.
Support for this broadcast comes from the City of McKeesport Fair Housing Office. Fair housing is your right, and the Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination in housing because of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, family status, or disability.
That includes renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, seeking housing assistance, or engaging in other housing-related activities. For more information about Fair Housing Act protections in the city of McKeesport, call 412-675-5020, extension 635.
Back for final a few minutes with Sean McIntyre from the Braddock's Battlefield History Center, braddocksbattlefield.org. 412-271-0800. The online, it says your current hours, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., but you mentioned you're going to be expanding those in the summer, correct?
Yes. Okay. Starting in April, we're actually expanding from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and it'll be Wednesday through Sunday.
So when we last left our story before the break, the tensions are rising between the British, who are coming in from the Atlantic coast, and the French, who are coming down from what is now Canada, from the Great Lakes area. They both want to corner this frontier of buckskin and buffalo, and pretty soon they're going to, you know, there's lumber, they're going to find coal pretty soon, all kinds of untapped riches. Plus, as you mentioned earlier, there are no roads, so whoever controls these rivers, the Allegheny, the Monongahela, the Ohio, controls all the trading routes into the interior of this frontier land. When do the hostilities spill into actual fighting? When did the battles start to break out?
The initial battles actually start to break out in this conflict between the French and the British. I mean, there's plenty of other conflicts between the French and the British, but this one actually starts to break out in 1754 with the incident that happens at Jumonville Glen, which is down in down near Fort Necessity
in Fayette County area near Uniontown.
A British unit led by George Washington surrounds and essentially massacres a diplomatic mission from the from the French. So there is some research that says that Washington may have fired the first shot at that event. So,
like Han Solo in Star Wars.
Right.
Yeah. but this, again, this reverberates through history, because this would be similar to imagine a modern day, an ambassador being assassinated in a country. It would be an act of war. It was an act of war then. It would be an act of war now.
Yeah, absolutely.
How are these armies arriving in this area? I mean, again, there's no railroads. There's no roads.
They are all marching in and then coming in by rivers.
Canoes, boats.
Yeah.
Little boats. Absolutely. Not like river boats that we would even think of now, or flatbed boats. They're coming in canoes and pierogues,
I think
is how to pronounce it.
Yeah, bateau or the other larger boats, and that's just basically a regular flatboat you have on the river.
When do they get to the Monongahela? When do they get to the Braddock's Battlefield? And why does that become the locus of this turning point of this French and Indian War?
So at this point, Braddock has, and honestly, the provincials have built a road from Alexandria, Virginia, all the way to this location, and has started to build it towards what is Fort Duquesne at the time. Mm-hmm. And the reason they're crossing here, because they thought it was the easiest way to cross the river. The Monongahela River at Braddock at the time was probably only 1.5 to 2 feet deep. And now it's 26 feet deep here. So it's a huge difference in the river depth. But they actually have built this road all the way to here, and they're coming with 1,500 soldiers. They actually sleep right near the border of what is today White Oak in McKeesport the night before this battle, and then cross the river that morning at like around 2:30 in the morning. They cross the first time July 9th.
There are no satellites. There's no two-way radio, but yet the French and the indigenous people know that they're coming.
Yes. Okay. There was actually, when the British forces first cross the Monongahela River, they actually find a still smoldering fire from natives that were there the night before.
So set the stage for us. What year, what day and year is this? And I think if you go to Kennywood Park, for instance, I think there's a placard over there that invites you to imagine. I guess they crossed the river twice. They crossed from McKeesport to what is now Duquesne, and then back across the river from what is now West Mifflin over into Braddock. What day and date is this?
This is July 9th, 1755. Okay. Braddock's plan is to begin the siege on Fort Duquesne on July 10th, 1755. So he's making good time, and his plans are going completely according to schedule. In fact, they're a little early.
And Fort Duquesne is where the Fort Pitt Blockhouse is now in downtown Pittsburgh. So if you can imagine the distance from Braddockboro, North Braddockboro, to downtown Pittsburgh, that's how far his army has to go.
6 miles by air from here.
We're just about out of time. So this is the cliffhanger that is going to make people have to come to the Braddock's Battlefield History Center to find out how the story ends. Spoiler alert, it doesn't end well for Braddock. It's not named, the town is not named for him because everything went so well. What goes horribly wrong for this army led by General Braddock and young George Washington?
The kind of bad end to this is they cross the river the second time. They climb the hill. Captain Beaujeu from Fort Duquesne has 250 men along with the Marines that came with Captain Dumas. And then he has 800 British Native American allies with him. So they have roughly 1,000 troops versus the British 1,500 troops. So if you're looking at numbers in a battle, the British are probably going to win this battle, but that's not the way this goes. The British continue to fight in the British style, which is line engagement, which is what you find in Europe at the time. And this is European soldiers' first introduction to what really is guerrilla warfare. The native warriors that are here are fighting from behind the trees, from behind the rocks that exist on this hill today. And they will fire and then move and then fire and then move. So the British don't know where to train their fire. And they're literally essentially in a shooting gallery. They're the targets in the middle of the shooting gallery.
We're just about out of time, but we mentioned that several years ago there was this important step in the future of the Braddock's Battlefield History Center, which was completely independent and is now connected, merged with Fort Ligonier. Talk about the importance of Fort Ligonier and why so many people have probably visited that resource, why that also tells part of this French and Indian War story.
Fort Ligonier has a great vision for the future of here in Braddock. We want to work with the community to develop this site and to make it more of a destination for tourism in the region. Fort Ligonier has been an amazing site since the 1950s and has slowly progressed and grown. And this is going to be very much a part of that same mission. These our museums are intertwined, not only because they take place in the same war, but they are part of the same path to get to Fort Duquesne. General Forbes, his last stop before attacking Fort Duquesne in 1758, which is 3 years after this, he is coming through that same route. So he comes across Pennsylvania instead of taking the Braddock the road that Braddock built up here. And that causes some controversy, but it gets him across the state. So both of these roads are intertwined and literally meet up not far from where we sit today.
We talk about Forbes Road, which is now, I believe, much of it is present day Route 22, or parts of it are at least. And
yeah, Route 22 and Route 30 kind of bounces back and forth.
And Braddock's Road, which is partially present day National Pike, US 40. And think of the wealth of historical sites that you can now visit, from Fort Ligonier to Bushy Run to Braddock's Battlefield to the Fort Pitt Blockhouse to Fort Necessity down near Uniontown, and really tell the story up close and personal of this, what, again, some historians consider the very first World War back in the 1750s.
Yeah, and it starts all right here in Western Pennsylvania. The entire thing starts right here in what is today Western Pennsylvania,
Sean,
all in our backyard.
Sean McIntyre has been our guest this morning. He is with the Braddock's Battlefield History Center, braddocksbattlefield.org, or you can call them at 412-271-0800. The museum is in North Braddock on 6th Street, and as Sean mentioned, they are going to be expanding very soon. So we are going to have you back on, Sean, in the very near future to talk about some of the growth down there, okay?
Sounds great. I'll be glad to be back with you.
And thank you all for listening this week to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, broadcasting from the Tomb City Center for Business and Innovation in downtown McKeesport. So long for now. You've been listening to Two Rivers 30 Minutes, copyright Tomb City Community Media Incorporated. Opinions expressed on this program are not those of Tomb City Community Media Incorporated. Listener support makes this program possible. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution, please visit our website at tubecityonline.com and click on the donate link. You can also get a free subscription to this program and other podcasts at our website using Apple's iTunes or Stitcher.com. If you've got a question or comment, we hope you'll write to us. Our address is Tube City Community Media Incorporated, P.O. Box 94, McKeesport, PA, 15134. You can email us at TubeCityTiger@gmail.com or call us at area code 412-614-9659. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Tube City Online.